Was it possible that Donna might just take the kid and decamp, maybe to her mother's place in the Poconos? Sure, it was possible. She might decide that 10 days apart wasn't enough. Not for him, not for her. Maybe a 6-month separation would be better. And she had Tad now. Possession was 9 points of the law, wasn't it? And maybe, a crawling, insinuating voice inside spoke up, maybe she knows where Kemp is. Maybe she'll decide to go to him, try it with him for a while. They can search for their happy pasts together. Now there's a nice, crazy Monday morning thought, he told himself uneasily. But the thought wouldn't go away. Almost, but not quite. He managed to finish every drop of his screwdriver before the plane touched down at Logan. It gave him acid indigestion that he knew would last all morning long. Like the thought of Donna and Steve Kemp together, it would come creeping back even if he gobbled a whole roll of Tums. But the depression lifted a little, and so maybe it was worth it. Maybe. Joe Camber looked at the patch of garage floor below his big vice clamp with something like wonder. He pushed his green felt hat back on his forehead, stared at what was there a while longer, then put his fingers between his teeth and whistled piercingly. Cujo! Hey, boy! Come, Cujo! He whistled again and then leaned over, hands on his knees. The dog would come, he had no doubt of that. Cujo never went far, but how was he going to handle this? The dog had shat on the garage floor. He had never known Cujo to do such a thing, not even as a pup. He had piddled around a few times, as puppies will, and he had torn the bejesus out of a chair cushion or two, but there had never been anything like this. He wondered briefly if maybe some other dog had done it, and then dismissed the thought. Cujo was the biggest dog in Castle Rock, so far as he knew. Big dogs ate big, and big dogs crapped big. No poodle or beagle or Heinz 57 varieties had done this mess. Joe wondered if the dog could have sensed that Charity and Brent were going away for a spell. If so, maybe this was his way of showing just how that idea set with him. Joe had heard of such things. He had taken the dog in payment for a job he had done in 1975. The customer had been a one-eyed fellow named Ray Crowell from up Freiburg way. This Crowell spent most of his time working in the woods, although it was acknowledged that he had a fine touch with dogs. He was good at breeding them and good at training them. He could have made a decent living doing what New England country people sometimes call dog farming, but his temper was not good, and he drove many customers away with his sullenness. I need a new engine in my truck, Crowell had told Joe that spring. Aye, Joe had said. I got the motor, but I can't pay you nothing. I'm tapped out. They had been standing just inside Joe's garage, chewing on stems of grass. Brett and Five had been goofing around in the dooryard while Charity hung out clothes. Well, that's too bad, Ray, Joe said, but I don't work for free. This ain't no charitable organization. Mrs. Beasley just had herself a litter, Ray said. Mrs. Beasley was a prime bitch St. Bernard. Purebreds, you do the work and I'll give you the pick of the litter. What do you say? You'd be coming out ahead, but I can't cut no pulp if I don't have a truck to haul it in. Don't need a dog, Joe said, especially a big one like that. Goddamn St. Bernard's ain't nothing but eating machines. You don't need a dog, Ray said, casting an eye out at Brett, who was now just sitting on the grass and watching his mother. But your boy might appreciate one. Joe opened his mouth and then closed it again. He and Charity didn't use any protection, but there had been no more kids since Brett, and Brett himself had been a long while coming. Sometimes, looking at him, a vague question would form itself in Joe's head. Was the boy lonely? Perhaps he was. And perhaps Ray Crowell was right. Brett's birthday was coming up. He could give him the pup then. I'll think about it, he said. Well, don't think too long, Ray said, bridling. I can go see Vin Callahan over in North Conway. He's just as handy as you are, Camber. Handier, maybe. Maybe, Joe said, unperturbed. Ray Crowell's temper did not scare him in the least. Later that week, the manager of the Shop and Save drove his Thunderbird up to Joe's to get the transmission looked at. It was a minor problem, but the manager, whose name was Donovan, fussed around the car like a worried mother while Joe drained the transmission fluid well, refilled it, and tightened the bands. The car was a piece of work, all right. A 1960 T-Bird in cherry condition. And as he finished the job, listening to Donovan talk about how his wife wanted him to sell the car, Joe had had an idea. I'm thinking about getting my boy a dog, he told this Donovan as he let the T-Bird down off the jacks.
Oh, yes?
Donovan asked politely.
Hiya, St. Bernard. It's just a pup now, but it's going to eat big when it grows.
Now, I was just thinking that we might make a little deal, you and me. If you was to guarantee me a discount on that dry dog food, Gaines meal, Ralston Purina, whatever you sell, I'd guarantee you to work on your bird here every once in a while. No labor charges.
Donovan had been delighted, and the two of them had shaken on it.
Joe had called Ray Kroll and said he'd decided to take the pup if Kroll was still agreeable. Kroll was, and when his son's birthday rolled around that year, Joe had astounded both Brett and Charity by putting the squirming, wriggling puppy into the boy's arms.
Thank you, Daddy. Thank you. Thank you,
Brett had cried, hugging his father and covering his cheeks with kisses.
Sure, Joe said. But you take care of him, Brett. He's your dog, not mine. I guess if he does any piddling or crapping around, I'll take him out in back of the barn and shoot him for a stranger.
I will, Daddy. I promise.
He had kept his promise, pretty much, and on the few occasions he forgot, either Charity or Joe himself had cleaned up after the dog with no comment. And Joe had discovered it was impossible to stand aloof from Cujo. As he grew, and he grew damned fast, developing into exactly the sort of eating machine Joe had foreseen, he simply took his place in the Camber family. He was one of your bona fide good dogs. He had house-trained quickly and completely. And now this. Joe turned around, hands stuffed in his pockets, frowning. No sign of Cujo anywhere. He stepped outside and whistled again. Damn dog was maybe down in the creek cooling off. Joe wouldn't blame him. It felt like 85 in the shade already. But the dog would come back soon, and when he did, Joe would rub his nose in that mess. He would be sorry to do it if Cujo had made it because he was missing his people, but you couldn't let a dog get away with... A new thought came. Joe slapped the flat of his hand against his forehead. Who was going to feed Cujo while he and Gary were gone? He supposed he could fill up that old pig trough behind the barn with Gaines' meal. They had just about a long ton of the stuff stored downstairs in the cellar. But it would get soggy if it rained. And if you left it in the house or the barn, Cujo might just decide to up and crap on the floor again. Also, when it came to food, Cujo was a big, cheerful glutton. He would eat half the first day, half the second day, and then walk around hungry until Joe came back. Shit, he muttered. The dog wasn't coming. Knew Joe would have found his mess and ashamed of it, probably. Cujo was a bright dog, as dogs went, and knowing or guessing such a thing was by no means out of his mental reach. Joe got a shovel and cleaned up the mess. He spilled a capful of the industrial cleaner he kept handy on the spot, mopped it, and rinsed it off with a bucket of water from the faucet at the back of the garage. That done, he got out the small spiral notebook in which he kept his work schedule and looked it over. Richie's International Harvester was taken care of. That chainfall surely did take the ouch out of pulling a motor. He had pushed the transmission job back with no trouble. The teacher had been every bit as easygoing as Joe had expected. He had another half a dozen jobs lined up, all of them minor. He went into the house. He had never bothered to have a phone installed in his garage. They charged you dear for that extra line, he had told Charity. And began to call people and tell them he would be out of town for a few days on business. He would get the most of them before they got around to taking their problems somewhere else. And if one or two couldn't wait to get their new fan belt or radiator hose piss on them. The calls made, he went back out to the barn. The last item before he was free was an oil change and a ring job. The owner had promised to come by and pick up his car by noon. Joe got to work, thinking how quiet the home place seemed with Charity and Brett gone, and with Cujo gone. Usually the big St. Bernard would lie in the patch of shade by the big sliding garage door, panting, watching Joe as he worked. Sometimes Joe would talk to him, and Cujo always looked as if he was listening carefully. Been deserted, he thought semi-resentfully. Been deserted by all three. He glanced at the spot where Cujo had messed and shook his head again in a puzzled sort of disgust. The question of what he was going to do about feeding the dog recurred to him, and he came up empty again. Well, later on he would give the old pervert a call. Maybe he would be able to think of someone, some kid who would be willing to come up and give Cujo his chow for a couple 3 days. He nodded his head and turned the radio on to WOXO in Norway, turning it up loud. He didn't really hear it unless the news of the ball scores were